Welcome to the world of Aeora, a news and lore podcast about the Pillars of Eternity games, as well as Obsidian Entertainment's upcoming release, Avowed. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the World of Aeora. I'm your host, Eric, aka Gingerino. Thanks, everyone, for joining me as we dive into another episode looking at the history, lore, and game mechanics of Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 as we gear up for the release of Avowed. For those new to the show, welcome to the show. Happy to have you here. We dive into the world of Aeora through those games to just better understand what's going on. If you're wondering why Avowed is paired with Pillars of Eternity, because maybe you're just searching for Avowed and you happen to find yourself here, it's because they share the same fantasy world known as Aeora. So if you're interested in learning about the world Avowed will be set in, you can play those games or listen to the show if that's what you want to do. And that way, when Avowed comes out, we'll have a better understanding and appreciation for the writing and the questing and just the game in general. In today's episode, I am going to be discussing the Seeker Slayer Survivor DLC from the second Pillars of Eternity game. I recently reloaded that DLC because the first time I had played it, and only time I had played it, I really rushed through it a lot because I'm not so much of a combat-focused person. And so even when I got to the points where there was lore and exposition, I was still just in this like go-go-go mentality, and I really didn't soak in a lot of the different options. So I replayed it recently, just looking at the different things I could have done, really sitting down and asking questions about what was going on there. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about the lore associated with the godlike being, not to be confused with godlike races, but this godlike entity known as Towamawai, which is kind of conflated with Galloway, god of nature and lord of the hunt in all of its forms. As well, we'll be talking about the temple of Towamawai in the island of Kazuwari and the whole story of Seeker Slayer Survivor. As a quick little warning, there are going to be major spoilers for that DLC. I am going to keep the first segment of today's episode spoiler-free, so if you want to listen to some lore, then you can and not have to worry about it. If you are concerned about hearing any major spoilers, then just don't listen to the second segment of this show today. I'll give a warning later as well, so you'll have plenty of heads up about it. As well, this is kind of a weird episode for me because there's not a lot of lore to read from. Me or you, anyone goes on to pillarsofeternity.fandom.com, where I use a lot of references just to help keep the show organized. There's not a lot of articles that explain the stuff that's going on in Seeker Slayer Survivor. As well, there isn't a hard copy book that I can read from that talks about the lore. So I had to replay the game, watch some videos, type some stuff out, but a lot of it is also going to be off the top of my head. So it's going to be an interesting way to do an episode. I'm actually kind of excited to try this out for once. So I would like some feedback on that. If you listen to this episode and you're like, hey, you know, that went pretty smoothly just like every other episode, then if you're on Spotify, maybe leave a message, I guess. I don't know, because you can do that on Spotify, but you can't do it anywhere else. Anyways, that's what we're going to be talking about today. No news to go over, although apparently it's rumored that June 9th will be the next Xbox showcase, and it's very likely to have Avowed there. I would be surprised if we don't see Avowed there. If we don't see Avowed at the Xbox showcase in June, then we'll almost certainly have a deep dive shortly thereafter, just because it's going to be releasing this year, right? They're going to give us some heads up. They're going to talk about the game. It's got to happen eventually. But other than that, nothing else to talk about. Let's dive into today's lore.
I'm curious, what exactly did you find there?
Okay, so even though I'm going to try to focus on the character or concept of Towamawai through most of today's episode, I am going to practically just summarize the entirety of Seeker Slayer Survivor. We're going to do some non-spoiler content right now, and then partway through this, we'll get into the more spoilery sections as we explore who or what Towamawai is. Now, to understand what Towamawai is, you're going to have to understand a little bit about the foundations and context for when we interact with this entity, as well as understand the deity Galloway, what the island of Kazuwari is, and the things that are going on there. To kind of set the scene a little bit, when you're playing Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire, you get introduced to this DLC, Seeker Slayer Survivor, when you receive an odd parcel on your ship. So you're sailing around the Deadfire Archipelago in your ship as the player character, the Watcher, and you receive an odd box. When you look inside the box, you find something odd, and this is the thing that gets you to come to the island of Kazuwari. The hook of this entire adventure is basically that there's something going on in the island of Kazuwari that only a Watcher can solve, and you are a Watcher. And so people have reached out to you in a very unorthodox fashion, as you'll soon find out, to be able to figure out how to solve what's going on there. So you receive this box as the Watcher. You open up the box, and you actually end up finding the severed head of an Amauan person. If you're not sure what an Amauan is, go ahead and check out one of my episodes on the Amauan people. They're one of the fantasy races in this world. But you find the severed head of an Amauan person in this box that you receive. And because you're a Watcher, and you have the ability to actually interact with souls, you're able to converse with the soul of this head that is still attached to it. This person, whose name was Muatu, M-U-A-T-U, is killed, and their head is sent to you so that you can commune with them, and they tell you, hey, there's this island, Kazuwari, and there's something really, really crazy going on, and only a Watcher can help, and I'm asking you, will you come and help me? Right, so that's the long and short of basically what's going on there. So you, by one means or another, agree to go to the island of Kazuwari to investigate what's going on, to solve a problem that only a person like you, a Watcher, can solve. Along the way there, you're intercepted by the god Gallowain, or more specifically, one of his beasts, and then he has kind of like a vision of himself that he projects to you, and you talk with Gallowain. Gallowain is one of the gods of this world. I've done many episodes on the gods of this world, including one that kind of does an overarching look at them. Gallowain, though, is Lord of the Hunt in all of its forms, also kind of looks as god of nature. If you're playing Pillars of Eternity, and you hovered your mouse over the word Gallowain, the little blurb that would come up says, God of the Hunt, Assassins, Pursuit, Wilderness, and Predatory Creatures. Gallowain favors the survival of the strong and the culling of the weak. And that's really relatable to what we're going to be talking about in today's episode when we get into who or what Tawamawai is. You interact with Gallowain, he may or may not be a fan of you depending on some actions that you've done within the game already, but he warns you about this island you're going onto, and he does refer to it as his island, which becomes important a little bit later on. And it's at that point that we get into the island of Kazuwari. We interact with some locales there, we interact with some of the animals and beasts that are there, but more importantly, we stumble across a location in this game called the Temple of Tawamawai. Now, you might be wondering at this point, who is this Tawamawai? We've been talking about Tawamawai this whole time. What do we have to say about them? Now, this is the difficult thing about today's episode, is that there is not really a lot of written down lore about Tawamawai and what's going on there. There is a large amount of articles on pillarsofeternity.fandom.com that are not filled in about the DLC for Sleeker Slayer Survivor, and there isn't a book that I can read stuff out of, so it's kind of just stuff that I can find in the game that my character already did. But really, all we have is either whatever we can remember or what we can find on Let's Plays on YouTube. So if I am incorrect in anything I say in today's episode, for those of you who are really well-versed in the lore of this DLC, send me an email, worldofaora@gmail.com, or hit me up on Twitter, @worldofaora, for any inconsistencies. I'm mostly going off of my own memory, as well as my own playthrough, and the couple of playthroughs I watched of other people who have done this. But there's only so much time I can do that before I have to, you know, record the episode that I wanted to do. If you float your mouse over the word Tawamawai when playing Pillars of Eternity Deadfire, a little blurb comes up and it reads, worshipped primarily by the small subset of animist Amaua native to the Deadfire. Tawamawai, sometimes called the Faces of the Hunt, has been generally conflated with Gallowain by travelers from outside the archipelago. So there we have the little blurb of official lore of what Tawamawai is. So Tawamawai is conflated with Gallowain, and I think that this is very well done by the writers at Obsidian, because I myself, playing this game, basically just figured Tawamawai is just the local name for Gallowain, Gallowain being this god of nature that we've been talking about. Now, this isn't the first time that we've seen one of the other gods referred to by another name, just because different cultures have different languages. For example, the god Hylia is named Hylia in Adiran, which is kind of the language that you see everywhere in these games. However, when you dive into other cultures, such as the Huana, living in the area of the Deadfire Archipelago, the setting for the second Pillars of Eternity game, their name for Hylia is Amira. It's a completely different name, but it's the same god, essentially speaking. And so I just figured Tawamawai is Gallowain, but just by a different name. Now, that's not to say that Tawamawai isn't that. Tawamawai does, in a sense, perfectly represent Gallowain, and so therefore kind of is Gallowain, but There's some spoilery stuff I don't want to get into there. There's definitely some differences, but there is also some overlap there. For now, recognize that Tawamawai is conflated with Gallowain. That doesn't necessarily mean that it is Gallowain. We'll get more into that in a little bit. But this is something that the game offers to you right up front. Like, right when you play the game, if you hover your mouse over Tawamawai, it says this, right? So there's still that little question mark hanging over your head. And as we play through Seeker Slayer Survivor, you learn that there are some differences, or at least there's something going on with Tuamuai that is different than Galloway. And perhaps that's what's going on. That's the thing that you're here to solve. But Tuamuai is essentially an entity that is, you could call them at the level of a god, of a deity. They are a spiritual entity made up of a massive amount of essence. They can control the world around them and control essence around them and the flow of essence through Audra. And people worship them, they are prayed to, and they have power. And so by all intents and purposes, Tuamuai looks to be like a god, and therefore is very easy to conflate with Galloway. Tuamuai is also often referred to as the Faces of the Hunt, which is the more common moniker that they go by, and is honestly the way that you can interact with Tuamuai. Tuamuai, the entity referred to as the Faces of the Hunt, when you are at the Temple of Tuamuai, which is the location that you stumble into when you're at Kazuwari, there is a giant statue there with three faces, one face being that of a spider, one face being that of a Stelgar, which is like this fantasy world saber-toothed tiger, kind of, and lastly, of a boar. And these three faces of Tuamuai, these three faces, being referred to as the Faces of the Hunt, are three different aspects of Galloway that perfectly kind of summarize Galloway as a deity and as a personality and as an entity on their own, which again leads credence toward the idea that Galloway and Tuamuai are one and the same. Each one of these different faces represent a different part of Galloway and also the name of the DLC. The spider head is referred to as the Seeking Face, the Stalgar head is referred to as the Slaying Face, and the boar head is referred to as the Surviving Face or the Survivor Face. And these three aspects of the hunt, seeking, slaying, and surviving, perfectly encapsulate individually, but also in their totality, the god of Galloway and Tuamuai as a whole. The three together, but also at the same time individually, represent that deity. This is one of those things where it's kind of hard to understand, especially in the first part of the DLC. When you get to the Temple of Tuamuai, you learn that it is more than just some religious temple where people got together and lit candles and bowed their heads and prayed. No, this being a temple dedicated to Tuamuai, worshipping a deity of it also called the Faces of the Hunt, they very, very, very much respect the hunt here. And in fact, the hunt is something of a sacred rite or ritual or part of life that is to be honored and strove towards. I don't know what the word is here, but that's what's going on. You discover that this Temple of Tuamuai actually has a crucible in it. Not a literal crucible that you pour hot, molten lava, rock, metal, whatever it is into, but a thing called the crucible where people get together and they battle to the death, right? So it's kind of like a gladiator pit arena, except people weren't just, you know, picked up and brought here and forced to battle to the death for the entertainment of others. People willingly come to this place in honor of the god Tuamuai, in honor of the hunt itself, in honor of battle, to honor seeking and slaying and surviving. And it very much becomes a key part of this group's culture and ideology and faith, if you will. And so you stumble into this temple, and for better or worse, end up in the crucible yourself. And then after kind of surviving the first rite of passage, you're able to learn more a little bit about what's going on here. You talk to a person named Humaire, who is essentially the head of this entire arena. They're the one that are in charge of overseeing everything as they are at the moment within the Temple of Tuamuai itself. Now, at this point, your characters, you know, entered into a battle arena, and they're kind of getting an idea of, like, what's going on here. But you've got to remember, you were here sent to figure something out. And so you confide with Humaire, they confide in you, you learn a little bit about what's going on here. Essentially, there is a disharmony going on within the Temple of Tuamuai that is threatening the longevity and the very existence of not only this temple, but the island itself. You see, and now I do want to give another heads up here. These are minor spoilers coming up ahead. I kind of am assuming that if you're going to listen to all of this, that there will be some things that are spoiled for you. When I say minor spoilers, I mean, like, it's not a big, crazy thing that I'm going to show you right now, but in the sense that you're not going to discover it yourself through playing it. So if you want to discover even the small details of this DLC for yourself, then by all means, pause now, go and play the game. But this next part, you kind of learn just through talking with characters, like, hey, this is what's going on. So the Temple of Tuamuai is actually has soaked within its walls and all around it the souls of the people that die there, right? Because people come to this battle arena, this crucible, and they get in these fights together and they are slain. And so the blood is flowing freely. But along with the blood flowing and bodies dying, the souls are leaving the bodies of these people. Because if you're not already familiar, this world runs on a cycle of reincarnation known as the wheel. And after the soul leaves the body, it can go into the beyond. But in this particular arena, the souls kind of like stay in the area and they become like one with each other and they sing together to continue to do the things that they're able to do. Because one of the things that you have to come up with when you're trying to figure out, how do I justify a crucible existing? How do I justify this gladiator pit? Where is this place getting all these crazy animals from that people have to fight? These monstrous creatures, these other contenders, and these people from history. Like, where is this Humaire person who's the head of this entire thing? Where are they getting all of these animals from? I mean, am I right? Well, there's a really easy kind of cheat way, I guess, that Obsidian did it, and actually really smart using the lore, is that the Temple of Tuamuai itself is a lot like a chanter. Now, if you're not familiar with what a chanter is, I do an episode on chanters. If you want to go check them out, that episode out, it explains a little more how chanters work and how they perform the abilities that they do. But to kind of summarize it for you, a chanter is a class of character that exists in this game. You know, like you can play a fighter, you can play a wizard, you can be a rogue, you can also play a chanter. How chanters work is they essentially, through song and dance, but mostly just song, they kind of stir the soul energy that is around them, the memories that are stored in that soul energy that is in the environment, just around them, even in the air. Through kind of stirring up the collective memory of all this soul energy, they're able to harness that energy that comes out of that in the form of spells. Usually, well, not necessarily usually, but it definitely has the potential for it. If you played a chanter, you recognize that these spells are abundant for them. Summoning spells. If you play a chanter in the games of Pillars of Eternity 1 or 2, you can summon skeletons, you can summon elemental blights, you can even summon very small dragons called worms. You can summon them basically out of nowhere, out of thin air. How does that work mechanically? Well, it's just all of this soul energy, all this essence kind of being channeled and then reformed into some form of matter like this. It's a spell of sorts. And the Temple of Tuamuai is essentially like, you know, I don't want to use the word robotic, but it's like a mechanical version of a chanter. Because all of this soul energy from people that are killed here is stored within the temple itself. Then when more challengers come in, this soul energy kind of sings and harmonizes together, and it creates the creatures or people that you will battle against in the arena. Unless, of course, it's hunter versus hunter. But, you know, if a hunter comes to the Temple of Tuamuai and they fight against a dragon, it's not that they went out, they captured a dragon, they brought it back. It's that the soul energy there summoned a dragon magically with all the soul essence that is there. And it's through these continuous battles that more people end up dying and that more soul energy powers this place that they're able to continue doing that. Now, this isn't a big secret, right? Like, this isn't the hidden reason why we're here. Oh my, they're killing people and then they use them to get more animals. Whoa, whoa, whoa. No, like, people, by and large, when they arrive, understand what they're doing. Like, the people here very religiously value the hunt and, core to their faith, value the fight to the death that they do. Like, they know what they're signing on for. Okay, this isn't a big secret kind of a thing. And this is part of their faith. And I mean, especially if you believe in the god Gallowayn, there is this idea that when you die and you are called to the realm of Gallowayn in the afterlife with your soul, that you will, for however long, hunt alongside the god that you know and love in his hunting grounds, that is his afterlife. I can't remember exactly where that comes up. I'm pretty sure it comes up somewhere in the games, you know, but that's kind of the idea that's there, at least before your soul comes back to the world again, because it is a cycle of reincarnation, right? But so, like, there's an idea of even if you die here, you're just going to end up in paradise or their version of heaven. So it's not a big deal for them. This is a point of honor and it's a point of faith. But the issue that's going on in the Temple of Tuamuai and therefore the entire island of Kazuwari, because this soul energy emanates from this temple and has actually given life to this island. Before this temple was here and before this essence was being kind of channeled here, the island essentially was a wasteland. It was a place where things were not growing. But then this crucible is created, people are dying, spiritual energy is coming into the area, it's meant to grow and create life, and so plant life and animal life start to spring into action. A lot of them are pretty predatory, but that's because, you know, in honor of the god of, what did we say about Gallowayn? God being hunt, assassins, pursuit, wilderness, and predatory creatures. You know, you can imagine that the wildlife there are pretty badass and want to kill you. But anyways, that's besides the point. The very island itself, as well as the faith of these people, rely on this crucible continuing to exist. But there's a problem. And Humaire explains it to the player character pretty well, which is that she has sensed a disharmony in the souls that are within the temple. Now, remember I mentioned the temple is a lot like a chanter, and that those souls will sort of, in a sense, sing to create these summoning spells to bring forth these people or creatures in the fights themselves. Well, Humaire has detected a disharmony in that. And so even though what would normally happen is hunters would come in for fights and for battles and challenge, and a creature or a person out of history would be summoned magically, they would generally be on even terms in the competition. It would be a fair fight, basically, is what I'm saying. But recently, the souls, Humaire has been detecting a disharmony and imbalance and a kind of an agony within these souls as well. The fights that are going on are completely unfair. We have these new hunters, these green hunters coming in, and they're going up against these behemoth creatures that they have no chance of killing. They have no chance of surviving. And so it's not honoring the hunt. You know, the faces of the hunt, the god of this temple, is creating this environment that is antithetical to what they even exist for. And so there's something going on there, but unfortunately no one has the abilities to understand what's going on or solve it, except for a watcher, because a watcher has the ability to peer into the spiritual realm, if you will, the in-between, where souls are. Watchers are able to see and communicate with souls. And so that's kind of what you're here to do. You're here to basically confront Tuamotu, see and talk about and figure out what's going on and see if there's a way to solve it. So what can we say about Tuamotu before I start getting in more spoilery related stuff? Tuamotu is kind of a large congregation or mass of soul essence that is there. Because of that, it has this kind of level of godhood where it, like on this island, is it essentially God. It can do whatever it wants. And it is heavily associated with Gallowayn, and Gallowayn actually refers to this island as himself. And Tuamotu, referred to as the Faces of the Hunt, exists and continues to exist to perpetuate this cycle in honor of Gallowayn and itself and the very hunt itself, by bringing people in and having them fight to the death and continuing that cycle that is endemic to all life and honoring that in a kind of a ritualistic way. There's a little bit more going beneath the surface when you start to look at it, and that's where we're going to start to get into some of the more spoiler-related content. And so if you have any intention on playing the Seeker, Slayer, Survivor DLC, I recommend stopping this episode now and then coming back after you've listened to it. It's a few hours long, but there's a lot of combat in there, so depending on how good you are, we'll determine whether or not you get through it fast enough. But yeah, I'm going to start the spoiler stuff now if you want to get out of it. So here's where we're going to get into some of the spoilers for the actual DLC and what we learn by the time we reach the end. In trying to figure out what's going on and where this disharmony within the souls are going on, you learn a few very important things. One thing, and I can't remember if this is the impression the game gave me or if this is something that's actually true, so if someone wants to correct me or affirm me on this, let me know. But I got the impression, just remembering the gameplay, that there was this idea that if you were a champion of the hunt, you know, if you went through all the trials and you were continuously surviving and you were always winning these battles, that eventually you would be able to get face with one of the faces of the hunt, that you could actually ascend as a spirit to become one of the faces of the hunt. I can't remember if that's exactly the case. I definitely remember feeling like that was what my character was being told they could become, but I don't know if maybe that was my head filling it in wrong. Either way, you do learn that there are actual souls of actual people behind the faces of the hunt. It wasn't just some generic god that existed out of nowhere that became Tuamotu and now it exists because it exists for no reason and that's all we have to say. There are actual people that have existed within history whose souls are behind those faces that are powering it. And so we learn that they're the spirits of Eruke, which is behind the surviving face, Aixica, A-E-X-I-C-A, I don't know how to pronounce it, Aixica, and is the seeking face, and then Wahami is the spirit behind the slaying face. So when we go out to, during one of the trials and one parts of the questing when we're doing the DLC, we're going out to find these artifacts of power that we can return that will allow us to enter into even tougher challenges within the Crucible, which will gain the attention of the faces of the hunt, thereby letting us actually commune with them at some point, because once we get their approval and all that, we can actually go talk to them, is basically how it goes. But in doing so, we interact with memories of these spirits and where they were, and we kind of learn the names of these spirits that are behind each one of these faces. And there definitely is something going on that we're not aware of as the player characters. Like, there's something going on that they know of, and we don't really understand what's going on. By going back to the Crucible and engaging in these higher tier challenges of combat, the faces of each of these faces of the hunt take notice of us, and they say, okay, you have now, you know, reached the point where I like you the most. You may take on my special challenge to prove that you are my champion. And you do at one point as a player have to choose one of the faces that you are going to be the champion of. I chose the Seeker. That just seemed to fit me more. I definitely am more of like the pursuit of knowledge kind of thing. That's one of my favorite things about the god Gallowayn, by the way. Even though Gallowayn is often associated with hunting and nature and beasts and survival and prey and predators, which is definitely more aligned with Gallowayn, that's why we see it so much. But the idea of just pursuit and even discovery and knowledge is also a very Gallowaynian, I don't know what word to use there, Gallowaynian thing to do. So even a scholar in an academic setting could be considered an accolade of Gallowayn because they're seeking answers, right? There's a part of that that's true. But anyways, I chose the Seeking face, so I completed those challenges and I got to that point where I was a champion of the Seeking face. And what that allowed me as a player character to do was essentially go to the Pool of Memories and go and commune with the spirits behind Tawamuai. And this is where we learn the truth about who Tawamuai is, what the Temple of Tawamuai is, and its connection to Gallowayn, the god of nature, lord of the hunt, and all of its forms. It turns out that Tawamuai essentially has a godlike status in this particular island, or a status of godhood. They have all kind of the functional abilities of a god, but they are actually just the spirits of these three individual people behind each one of these faces. And even though I think this might just be a me thing, I was led to believe that it was multiple people throughout history who became the faces of the hunt, it actually was just these three. Iruke has always been the surviving face, Axika has always been the seeking face, and Wahami has always been the slaying face. They have always been these three aspects of the hunt. And these three aspects of the hunt perfectly exemplify who and what Gallowayn is and the hunt in itself. Because if you are slaying for no reason, like you're not seeking something, then it's just pointless murder. There's nothing behind it. If you slay without the idea that you want to survive, you know, slaying and surviving, then that's also pointless. It's just you dying or putting yourself out to die. If you're not seeking something, it's pointless. If you're not surviving by the end, it's pointless. But if you're also not overcoming something, then what are you living life towards? It's antithetical to all of us. And so these three aspects, though they are separate, require full totality in each of them to be able to honor the hunt in all of its forms. And so we learn that these three spirits are behind each individual face. When we finally go to commune with Tawamuai, the god, or the god-ish thing, and we interact with these faces of the hunt in their spiritual form, we're interacting with them in the in-between, which is the space between the here and now, where mundane creatures live, and the beyond, where you go after you die. So you're in this in-between space, literally called the in-between, and we see Tawamuai's den, the spiritual realm of Tawamuai's den. We speak with these three spirits. We see a giant piece of Audra within the map of this area. So like if you open up the map and you look at the area that your character is in, you can see this Audra pillar that is red and also fractured, completely broken apart at one point. Now, the interesting thing here is that Audra is usually green. Audra, if you're not familiar, I do an episode on Audra. Go and check it out. Audra is very important to this world. The really important thing to note is that Audra can contain and channel soul energy with inside of it, right? And it's usually green, but this Audra is red, and that's for a very important reason.
If you find your trail has run cold, come to me with whatever you have. There is much I may be able to do for you.
And what's really interesting about this particular piece of Audra that's red when we're playing it in the game is that when later on you have the opportunity to repair it, if you do so choose, the Audra returns back to its green color. And we aren't told exactly why this happens, but I suspect it's because the souls that are trapped with inside of this Audra, with the bond being broken between these two segments of this pillar of Audra, they're kind of stuck there, and it's making them angry and aggressive and hostile, I suppose. And I feel like that red is a representation of where the souls are at in terms of like their emotional stability, if that makes any sense. I don't know. It could also just be that Audra turns red when it's disconnected from each other. Who knows? but more over to like what's going on here with the Red Audra. This Audra is broken apart. It's not connected anymore. So it was, you know, if it was like a continuous line, there is now a segment of it that's been broken apart. And this is causing the flow of souls within the Temple of Tuamotu to halt. So essentially, the souls aren't going to where they're supposed to go to. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. And the very purposes behind the Temple of Tuamotu is not functioning properly. Now, as it turns out, this was actually orchestrated by one of the faces of the hunt themselves, Wahami, the slaying face of the hunt. He destroyed this pillar of Audra within the Tuamotu's den, which is again in the in-between realm, in the hopes that it would actually attract a Watcher character to come and investigate, because then they would enter into Tuamotu's den just like you did, and then he would be able to take over your body, he theorizes. And apparently, Wahami was himself a Watcher at one point in history. And so I guess there's some credibility behind this. So now you're in some real trouble. You're stuck in the in-between in Tuamotu's den. You've approached Wahami, and he's basically like, I'm going to kill you here and then take over your body and then re-enter the world because I've been living inside of this statue for the past however long, and he wants to get out. Thing is that there's more to the story going on here. When you go back to Eruke and Exika, and you do some clever investigating between the two, you actually end up discerning a few things. First off, that Wahami is not the mastermind behind this plan. It's actually Exika. She wants to leave the statue as well, and she has convinced Wahami to do what he's doing to get them to leave. The problem here, you might wonder, is like, what does Wahami doing this and then leaving in the body of another person do to help Exika leave this statue? Well, as it turns out, these three individuals, Eruki, Exika, and Wahami, I don't know how to pronounce their names, but whatever, this is what I'm going with. All three of these people are the same person, just over different periods of time. As I've mentioned, this world runs on a cycle of reincarnation, and these three individuals were three separate people within history, but they are also three people that share the same soul. So they're actually only one soul. It's just three personalities that have existed over the course of that soul's lifetime, which just adds to kind of the complexity of what's going on here, especially with Exika being the mastermind behind it all, tricking the slaying face Wahami to doing what he did so that they can actually escape. Because, you know, they enjoyed being servants of Galloway for a long time, but they kind of want to get back into the real world and do their own thing. Or at least that's what two of them want to. Eruke wants to survive, wants to stay, or just doesn't want things to change. So whether you battle Wahami or you have a really high skill check or dialogue check within the game, you resolve this issue. You can convince Wahami to stand down and let you leave, and they can, and you can, or you can kill him, or you can kill Exika after you reveal to him the truth of what's going on, or you can just kill everybody. You can choose to repair the Audra if you want, or not repair it if you want, in which case I believe you get an ending slide pretty much right away, because the game's over, because you can't go anywhere, you can't escape. And then, after you leave that, the end game of Seeker Slayer Survivor kicks in. And basically, Galloway and his, I guess, beast creature slave thing, he's sending a big beastie after you in Temple of Tuamotu, and it's finally gotten there. A creature called the Parokoa, which is just kind of like a giant crocodile, but a little more agile, and it's just a giant beast, and its main thing that it likes to do is it is patient. It waits to figure out what it needs to do to take down its prey. It is a formidable enemy to go against. But in engaging with dialogue with Galloway, you learn a few interesting things that you kind of had insights to while you were in Tuamotu's den interviewing the three faces of the hunt in their spiritual form. And that is that there was actually something else going on within the Temple of Tuamotu and why it was built. As you see, when you're in Tuamotu's den, you got these little glimpses of conversations that these people who were the faces of the hunt, that they were having with other people. And you learn something along the lines of there being these copper lines buried deep within or underneath the Temple of Tuamotu where people wouldn't find them. And that's a very interesting thing because copper is used in animancy experiments, animancy being the science of the soul. And so it seems like there was probably some purpose for the Temple of Tuamotu. When you start to really break through the plan that Exika has to escape the statue that is the faces of the hunt, you learn that this Temple of Tuamotu was actually developed by them for the purposes of simulating Watcher abilities. Because up to this point, Only a Watcher can do what they do. A Watcher is capable uniquely of looking into the in-between and speaking to souls that are walking around in this particular state. They can actually have a back and forth. Some people can see into the in-between. Other people might get visions from it. But not everyone can see into and converse back like a Watcher can. And this Temple of Tuamotu'i was kind of meant to be able to do that, but on a mechanical level. It could give anybody the ability to do it. At least this is my understanding. Again, if anyone's understanding the lore differently, perhaps I'm misunderstanding the narrative. It's very possible. Just send me an email, worldofaora@gmail.com. But this is kind of how I'm understanding things to go, is that the temple is basically a giant device in this particular sense. And then when you speak to Galloway, you go learn that it even goes further than that. That Galloway was actually using the Temple of Tuamotu'i as a kind of backup plan in case the wheel ever failed. The wheel is what is referred to as the cycle of reincarnation, but it's also a good moniker for the mechanics of how souls empower the gods, right? Because the gods, they exist, but they don't just exist and that's it. They also need energy to survive because they are entities. They're real entities and they require some level of sustenance. And that sustenance is kind of gained through the process of the wheel. And Gallowayne, I guess, believed that there was a decent enough chance that wheel could one day fail, or that it might, you know, dry up, so to speak. I don't know what word you would want to use here. But he basically had this idea that, like, well, if something happens and the wheel isn't functioning properly and we're not gaining our soul energy the way we needed, I am going to have this huge crucible on an island that is my island. And if anything ever happens, I will just hide away in there and live off of the fat of this place. It's kind of how I'm putting it anyways. So it was kind of his backup plan to survive, which that was it was a perfect ending to this DLC, because you were seeking out this island and you're seeking answers to what you're doing. And the whole time you're also slaying and you're getting better at combat and you're gaining in your ability to fight and kill creatures and monsters and enemies. And then at the end, you learn about Galloway's desire to survive. And it really kind of tied all three of these aspects in very well when you see that even the god of this world, or a god of this world, I should say, is trying to find a way to survive. And this is his way of doing it. It's to basically create a giant repository of soul energy that he can live off of if ever there comes an emergency situation. I'm not going to spoil how Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire goes for you, but there's definitely something going on that could threaten the god's livelihoods. And if you want to learn more about that, you can play the games or listen to any related episodes that I've already talked about this stuff on. That's the end of the DLC, learning this about Galloway. There's a lot of choices that you make as a player character, whether or not you repair the Audra, whether or not you kill the faces of the hunt, whether or not you put a different spirit in the faces of the statue, right? So you can leave those three spirits within there and they'll continue to do what they're doing, for better or for worse. You could kill them and replace the spirit in the faces of the hunt with a few different things. One, you could sacrifice one of your companions to do it, so he kind of stops being bloodthirsty for a while, but then I think he goes back. I can't remember what happens. You could also put the spirit of the animal beast you fight, the Porakoa, into the faces of the hunt, so now it's in control of the Temple of Tuamotu'i. There's a whole bunch of different options, and it can get a little bit confusing, but it's really cool to think about that, especially since, again, Tuamotu'i's kind of received this level of godhood. It's weird. Tuamotu'i is not a god that is a god that has given godhood by a god divinity sort of a thing. Yeah, that's everything about Tuamotu'i and the Temple of Tuamotu'i from Seeker Slayer DLC. So now, let's wrap up the episode and ask, what might this have to do with Avowed?
Is an oath worth the weight of a crown?
Now, obviously, Tuamotu'i being locked into Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire, I don't think we're going to see anything like that related in Avowed at all. But will we see anything similar in terms of writing? Maybe. There is one idea from all of this that I think is interesting that we could see in Avowed, and that is the idea of having this kind of massive amount of soul energy coming into one place and kind of gaining its own sentience or its own entity, if you will. Like a whole bunch of souls coming together and then it's almost like they average out or something like that, or they congeal into one entity, even though they're made up of a bunch of different parts, and that entity has kind of got like a godlike status or a godhood status to it. We could see an element like that in Avowed. There's definitely that potential to see within the stories. So who knows? We might be diving into a ruin or a subterranean area and it goes way further than we thought, and we actually end up running into a whole bunch of trapped souls that are locked underground somewhere, and they've actually ended up kind of conjoining and creating this sort of deific personality that is just trapped underground, and they're gonna try to use you to get out. It's kind of got some Lovecraftian horror there to it a little bit, but yeah, I don't know. That's the only way I can really think about it, and it's definitely an interesting idea. I say it every episode. I hope Obsidian does this or does that, but you know they can't do everything, so it's a cool idea. Definitely one worth exploring, but they've already done it with Tawamawai, so they need to again? Not necessarily, but it's there, and it's been established as potentially in this world that we could see that. But other than that, that's all there is I can think of for what's related to Avowed, and that's everything to talk about today. So thanks everyone for listening. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode, as I always hope. You know what? One of these episodes I'm going to tell you, I hope you didn't enjoy it. I hope this one pissed you off, but not this one. This one I hope you like this one. I haven't been playing anything worth talking about today. I've just been playing Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty. I want to get that finished. I really, really love that game. I honestly do. I've loved it since launch, and I just want to get that expansion done. I'm looking into diving back in Outer Worlds, like I said, as well as Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire. I'd like to do another rerun of that before Avowed comes out. And the way my schedule is, I might have to start now if I want to see everything in that game again. It's a big game, so we'll see. Thanks, everyone, for your feedback on stuff that I've been asking on lately, and thanks for sending in emails, asking questions. It's been great having conversations with everybody about Avowed and games in general. So if you'd like to reach out, ask a question about the show, myself, about games, or if you're new to the world of Aora and you want to just talk about what you're doing in Pillars of Eternity, your experiences you're having, if there's any topics you'd like to talk about, send me an email, worldofaora@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter @worldofaora if you want to follow any updates for the show. As well, if you've been listening for a while and you feel like you want to support the show in any way, even if it's a one-time thing, head to ko-fi.com/worldofaora. That's ko-fi.com/worldofaora if you want to support the show. If that's not something that you can really do or want to do, don't worry about it. It's just there for those who are into supporting shows like that. That's everything I can think about for talking today. Thanks, everyone, for joining me as I rambled about the lore from Seeker Slayer Survivor, specifically focusing on Tawamawai and the temple that it is housed within. There was not a lot of articles for me to read from, so it was basically just anything I could type out or remember off the top of my head. So hopefully this wasn't too difficult to listen to. Thanks, everyone, for sticking with me. I'm your host, Eric. I'll see you guys next time.